Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We're back with another episode of A Gentleman's World. And our site is CryptoTalkRadio.net. We would appreciate if you can share for anybody else who would benefit from any of our various podcasts that we have available, not just Gentleman's World, but also our Basic Cryptonomics and For the Love of Boxing. As we've changed our schedule and we've kind of formalized things down, we hope this gives more quality than we've done before. And we moved to Anchor.fm, and we've been pleasantly surprised at the experience in Anchor.fm. And hopefully this bodes well for the future of the platform. And we want to continue bringing content for as long as we're able, because we know that we are not guaranteed time on the planet, so we want to maximize as much as we can. Hopefully, if you've been following along, you heard Dr. Egypt Aradia on Monday's episode, and it was enlightening and inspirational. I thoroughly enjoyed speaking with her, and hopefully we get her back on the show. And we have some new guests lined up coming up in the next couple of weeks, and we have some good stories that we want to have told and interesting people to meet. So I think it's a good thing. Today, it's all me. It's all about me. You're going to hear just me today, but I promise when we do the guest recording, we'll be more guests. It's just that there won't be a guest on every episode. And I like that. I want it spread out a little bit so you kind of get a blend. And there's always that anticipation aspect. So for today, I figured as it's kind of the thing in the news and there's a broader impact than just you and I figured I would share just some initial thoughts. And this probably won't be that long of an episode, but just some initial thoughts on this whole Russia and Ukraine situation. I've not followed it closely, predominantly because there's a lot to it. And it goes back a long time. Like we're talking, I think this whole thing must have started when I was still in high school. That's how long this thing really has been going. And probably even a little bit more than that because, you know, it has origins back in the old Soviet Union days. So I know that it's been back and forth, and I've kind of summarized it down, at least my interpretation of the primary complaints coming out of Russia and now later China. I think there's an international sentiment against Western, what's called Western values. And when we say Western values, we're really meaning the United States, but also NATO, which has been influenced by Western ideologies. There was an episode of Law and Order, and I can't remember the name of the episode, but there was a guy, and he's a regular white guy, like anybody else. But he's acting like he's, you know, Arabic or something. And he's talking about how the United States has negatively influenced countries like Iran, Iraq, and so on with their ideologies. And that's what it made me think of when I kind of dug a little bit deeper into the situation and the demands and everything back and forth. And I was obviously there, but not watching the situation with Crimea and the Obama administration. All I remember is people saying Obama basically took an L and he drug his feet. And because he drug his feet, Crimea gets annexed. And on the Western side, or at least NATO countries, pretty much uniformly believe that the goal is to reform the Soviet Union and to bring back what was a superpower at the time. Whether that's true or not, I can't say because I'm not there in that room, but I can say that from what I have observed in the coverage from the Russian side, they're really bothered by a number of actions from NATO, but also the United States specifically. Things like the sending of weapons near their borders, things like, you know, defense silos, Kyiv. It seems like their biggest beef is what they feel is the West, quote unquote, pushing into their territory and making them less relevant, making them less of a power, taking away their dominance where they're kind of pushing back a little bit. And I would argue that North Korea is probably the same way, that there's just this thought that, you know, these guys they're not with us and they're pushing against us and they're causing us to be perceived as weak when we once were strong. And it's a natural causality, right? There's an action and a reaction. That's my take on it from what Russia is claiming or desiring. And China has chimed in, and China kind of feels similar. China, of course, is a superpower, but the two, China and Russia, have been kind of I don't want to say allied, but they've been very close in their criticism of this encroach from the Western side, quote unquote. And it seems like just general democracy is not desired, and they don't want it pushed or forced on other countries. I actually agree with that. I don't agree that our methodologies, ideology should be forced on any other country. And it does seem like that we actively work to do that. And the reason I think I have so much of an issue with it goes to what really happened over in Afghanistan recently, which, you know, we had a big part to play in that. And then ultimately what happens is, you know, we install essentially a figurehead, because that's basically what he was, a figurehead over there. And after we install this figurehead, you know, things get to a fever pitch and the Taliban takes it over and people die on our watch. And it's this whole big fiasco that's a black stain on the Biden administration, because basically we set that fire. We started that. Some people blame Trump, but it really wasn't Trump's fault, because Trump's organizational withdrawal plan was a lot more in protection of American citizens than what Biden did. And most people who are patriots that really believe in our military didn't like the way Biden pulled out. It wasn't that we needed to pull out or not. It was the way that it was done, disorganized and just kind of ripping the bandage off, which, you know, if you were to ask Biden, he would say, well, he had to do it, man. Come on, man. And that, you know, I think put a bad taste in people's mouths. But once we fast forward and we see that, okay, this Russia situation now is hitting a fever pitch, and he's talking about, look, we've got a problem here. And what we're seeing is you guys are encroaching on our territory, but you're also imposing your values, and we don't want it. And we feel that we should maintain what we have and our own sovereignty, and to some degree kind of go back to our older day values that we used to have as a country and as a culture. I can't hate on that thought process if that's truly what its motivation is. We don't know if it is, but I can't hate on it if that's truly what it is. Now, we know that the troop deployments are not going to change. Some of this also goes back to a plane that was shot down, MH17, which I believe was shot down over Ukraine, and it was a passenger plane. And initially, it was believed that it just had some issue and found out that there was a Buk missile that hit this dude, and it crashed. And then Russia said, no, we didn't do it. And that might have been kind of the first indication that there was a problem. And I know NATO has been kind of involved, and NATO's been trying to expand. And there was talk about putting Ukraine in NATO, and that has far-reaching ramifications, because if whatever countries in NATO, there's part of the articles that says that pretty much anybody who's in that alliance that gets attacked, basically all the different countries that are part of it have to defend. And then now it's weird, because it's almost like this Borg type domination thing where you want everybody to just join this thing, with the goal being that we're all a peaceful unit, but certain of these don't want to be part of it, and they don't want anybody that was at least partially aligned with them to be part of it. Russia has, I believe, in a long time wanted to kind of reunify certain parts, just like North Korea has. And there's no solid answer on the Cold War's impact on the sentiment. Like, did we truly convince everybody that we did the right thing after the Cold War? I think most people believe that NATO, after the Cold War, NATO shouldn't have done the outreach. But to their defense, there's nothing saying that the countries can't embrace NATO should they choose to. And there's nothing allowing Russia to make the demands that they're doing. And I think that's where the divide is. Russia's making demands they don't really have the entitlement to do, but they're putting up a show of force. Now, they're lesser of a power than they used to be, but at the same time, we have to think about the byproduct of this. We have to think about the collateral damage. By doing something like this, where we're allowing NATO to kind of say, you know, we're just going to do what we want to do, Russia, you have to deal with it, and over 10,000 people die, is that a better answer, as opposed to, look, let's make a deal with Russia. We'll stop our expansion, and you and Ukraine can work it out as long as you work it out peacefully and you don't try to force annex them as you did in Crimea, then we'll work with you. But if you try to use force, then we can't support it. And maybe that's what the stance they're trying to take. But if you were to listen to Putin, he's making it seem like they're the ones that are coming up with force, and we're just trying to defend our front lines. And so we want them to back down their front lines because we don't trust them. We frankly don't trust them. We don't trust what they're trying to do. In the back and forth of all this, you know, there's been diplomatic negotiations and all this, and I don't think they go anywhere, mostly because of who's in charge in the United States. And I think NATO would basically listen to whatever the U.S. tells them, which is sad. But unfortunately, the man we have in charge isn't inclined, I don't think, or prepared to deal with a crisis like this. I don't believe that. I know also that, and this is a risk, I'm calling this, I know also that there's still, especially in North Korea and other places, there's still this nuclear pot. I'll say pot because we don't really know what's all involved. But with what happened with the Soviet Union, so you're going back to the 90s, with the Soviet Union and then North Korea in particular as well, there was a lot of nuclear things, activity, stores, weaponry that were kind of floating around. And one thing the United States tried to do was to help denuclearize, get all the nuclear weapons and get rid of them or somehow remove them from being used and then put rules in place against their use going forward. In the United States, the one funny story is that many of the nuclear warheads and weapons were buried in it's like a pit out there in Washington State, in the center of the state, close to the Tri-Cities, and they're still there. And people were stumbling across it later, but it was like, okay, is this nuclear waste going to cause a thing or not? So some places buried the weapons, some places just stocked them somewhere, some places even dropped them into the ocean. There was all this kind of just action to just get rid of nuclear weapons. And Russia and the United States were in the middle of that, and they were trying to get Ukraine at the time to get rid of their nukes, and Kyiv decided to give the warheads to Russia. But they said, you know, we want to make sure that we're protected, that you're not going to attack us. If we give this to you, the agreement has to be you're not going to attack us. Well, in 2014, I believe, then Russia decides to invade the Ukraine. And as part of the Ukrainian invasion, that's the annexation of Crimea. And this was mostly spearheaded by separatists. So people that they believed in the Russia and going back to the larger country. And, you know, there's always these ones that kind of want to go back to the way things were. And they kind of helped enable this. This whole thing, again, has resulted in a lot of deaths trying to make this happen. And these protests that were happening, it was basically like an insurrection, a true insurrection, mind you, that said, you know, we this is what we want. We want to be back underneath the Russian way of being. Meanwhile, they had brought in a president, and he was basically a figurehead, I would say. He was a figurehead. And this president, he couldn't keep a handle on it because he had no power. He wasn't anything. And they essentially took it over. It is similar to Afghanistan. As I describe it to you, it's like it's very similar. But I think what put it over the edge for Russia, in at least their urgency to try to do something, was the United States. They had people that were there that were appearing to support what was happening. They weren't really supporting what was happening. They appeared to. So because of this appearance of, hey, you agree with this disruption and this what's going on here, you know, we treat that as, okay, you're causing this problem that we have to take and put some guardrails around this. So now Obama is essentially afraid of Russia for the duration of his presidency. And he didn't intervene when people told him he probably should, to help protect people, but also to make sure that the Ukraine population was stayed safe with, you know, troop deployments and weapons and da-da-da. Now, some people said that him staying out of it was probably smart in keeping lives alive. We can debate that all day long. The point is, most would say that Crimea fell because Obama failed them. That's what most would say in looking at it. Nobody really reflected on it because in the United States, it didn't affect anybody directly because it was just Crimea, and it didn't go further than Crimea at that time. Like, Obama almost benefited from the fact he was almost out of office by this point. He was not that far out from being out of office. So I think it was just a perfect storm of timing that allowed him to not be truly criticized at the time and even after for at least partially kind of inciting some of the fury we now see. Like, it's a lot worse than it used to be, and we can trace back some of that to what happened back then, is my point. So then there's the sentiment starts growing about getting to a natural Europe, a unified Europe, a single Europe that hasn't been for a long time. Putin, on the other hand, has said, well, we agree with the unification of something, but we think the Soviet Union was the right answer. And ultimately, we think that Ukraine is part of us, that they're with us. They're not part of what the other part of Europe's doing. They're part of us. We are one people. North Korea has said the same thing about South Korea, that reunification within this should be our priority. And it would have happened a long time ago, but to quote a Scooby-Doo, if not for those meddling kids over there in the United States. And that's basically who it is the whole thing is Putin feeling like the United States is ultimately the cause for why Ukraine is not part of whatever union that they would have had or should be able to come up with, and that the continued disruption from the West is causing this unnecessary turmoil between the two that should be together. We should be unified. We should be basically one people. You've heard Kim Jong-un say the same thing about South Korea at times prior to Trump going in office. You know, Rocket Man, when it's, you know, we should be one people. Now there, they have a DMZ, demilitarized zone. It's not peace, because there's never peace. I believe the war never really, it's kind of like a standstill. But there was always this chatter when Trump came in office that, okay, we could probably reunify, we can get this done, and we can use help from the United States to support it because they support South Korea and we want to work it. But that took Trump coming in there and basically slapping the dude down. Once Biden got in office, all of a sudden, Kim Jong-un's firing off rockets again and making threats, and then it's all trash. So notice also that when Trump was in office, although this was still going on, it wasn't anywhere near the fever pitch that we now see it. And Putin even came out immediately after Biden got elected and said, this isn't good, and we're going to need to do something about this because it's the wrong direction for what we want from the United States, which is to basically stay out of our business. Like, some of these countries, China, for sure, or Russia, have said repeatedly, we want the United States to stay out of our business. Let us do our own thing. Stay out of our way. As long as we're not messing with you, don't mess with us and let us do our own thing. And the United States has hesitated because they have at least somewhat of an interest to do it because of their membership in NATO and their obligations underneath the agreement. So we can, however you point the blame, whether you point the blame at NATO, or you point the blame at Putin, or you point the blame at the figurehead over in Ukraine or Obama, it ultimately doesn't matter. This has been going on, like I said, for years. It's just hit a fever pitch, and people should reflect and say, you know, the Soviet Union as it was, as a superpower, there were pros and negatives to it. And once the Soviet Union disappeared and was disbanded, and now we see that there's all this chaos, this contention between what used to be part of it, we have to start thinking about the impacts outside of this region, because, you know, you have impacts on energy because of natural gas and the inability to hit natural gas. You have impacts on crypto, primarily because crypto, the sentiment is sketchy as to, well, what, you know, if there's war, what's going to happen there? Impacts potentially on our military, impacts on our general economy. There's all sorts of broad-reaching impacts to the current disruption that we didn't see hardly at all during the Trump administration. We see specifically that during what Biden was trying to do in when he came in office and trying to do the transatlantic alliance and all the stuff that Trump pulled out of, the transatlantic alliance, Trump pulled out of that because we were spending, aka billions and billions of dollars, and not getting anything for it in return. And then Trump was purposely slapping down Putin to the point people thought he was allied with the guy. But in truth, he was trying to cut deals and do the stuff, good, bad, or otherwise. And we didn't see anywhere near this kind of disruption. It was happening. We didn't see it. And because we didn't see it, there's no appreciable impact. We knew that there's something going on out there, and we knew how Ukraine was being affected, and we knew what was going on with the Crimea situation, and we knew Putin was trying to increase his authority. But we also saw what appeared to be more of a receptiveness to Trump than certainly Obama or Biden by far and away out of Putin. Then that people, and I would say people, I'm talking about the media, claimed that because Trump pulled out of the transatlantic alliance, it started this. No, it didn't. If you look at it, Trump pulling out of that alliance was doing what Putin wanted him to do and wanted the U.S. to do, which is to stay out of the business, stay away from it, let us do our own thing. That's what Trump was essentially trying to do to save money. When Biden gets in office, he's, again, ill-equipped to deal with the diplomatic nuances of this. The sad thing is, of course, Biden was vice president when the Crimea situation happened. So already it puts the United States in the perception of a weak position, because you have a president in Obama who didn't act on Crimea, and now you have a president in Joe Biden who was vice president during that situation, further not able to do anything about this disruption. Then you top that all off with situations that he did with Afghanistan, situations he did with the submarine nonsense with, I think it's France, just on and on. There's all these issues where Biden just appears ill-equipped to handle it from a diplomatic perspective, and Russia is just going forward and doing what they're going to do. And whether it turns into war, nobody really knows. We see that all signs point to yes, but we hope not. We hope that we can bring it back to a center. I just, from what I see, I don't see that there's a good sign ahead for Joe Biden. And I say that because let's look at it all in one big circle. Joe Biden inherited the COVID pandemic, and he's not been able to get his hands wrapped around it, to the point that everybody in the White House basically threw up their hands and said, fine, just drop the mask mandates, drop all the shot mandates, just drop all the mandates and let people choose after a year of everybody suffering in 2021. So, and then they still don't have their heads wrapped around it, to the point that their own, you know, governors are turning against them because they're not seeing significant results. And they're not seeing good, solid distribution of resources. They're not seeing that people are able to do what they need to do. It's a big problem all the way around. So you got that. You have the education system, which Biden has tried to fix. You have the electric, this pie in the sky, I said it before, of trying to get electric vehicles to be the standard. And the challenges of that, because we don't have charging, and then giving money to build electric charging things along highways that aren't there, when we don't even have call boxes anymore along freeways. We don't even have cell signal along those freeways, and we're expected to build this massive infrastructure. Then you talk about trying to move to clean energy. You talk about the dropping the Keystone, which spikes gas prices, so he has to try to get his heads around that. Then trying to manage what the Brexit impact is going to be. Then trying to manage his, you know, what's going to happen in 2022 in November with the primaries and the predicted blowout and him becoming a lame duck president. Then you talk on top of all that, like we haven't even scratched the surface. On top of all this, you talk about his own reputation and his vice president, both of which have tanked reputations. And, you know, we're in the second year in office. Like, he has so much to deal with. That's not even counting this business with, and this is 10 times anything else he has to deal with, all because, from my perspective, he rushed into office and started cranking out executive orders that didn't really appreciate the damage that they would cause. And as a result, nobody benefited. Nobody benefited. Nobody there benefited. The American citizens didn't benefit. Travel didn't benefit. Hospitality didn't benefit. Energy didn't benefit. And our allies, none of them benefited. So it feels like a bad situation overall. It feels like war is somewhat upon. We hope not. We hope that there's something that could be done. But it seems like a far cry because we don't have the right person in office to do what's necessary to make sure things stay on the up and up. And it's not good for, you know, the state of our economy now, but also in the future. And that means it's going to be hard to predict what it is that we need to do. It's going to be hard to predict how we handle it. It's going to be hard to predict how the core United States is protected, because we haven't ever had something to this severity in a long time. So are we prepared for what is going to happen? And I'll frankly say I'm not confident in the current administration's ability to keep everybody safe. I certainly hope that something could be done and that cooler heads will prevail, but it doesn't seem to be on the target. It doesn't seem to be part of the plan. So that's my thoughts on it, and it's my opinion. And I would share, again, if you have comments, questions, feedback, or anything about this topic, CryptoTalkRadio.net, we do have a forum. If you'd like to leave those comments and suggestions or any feedback, and we will be happy to cover them on a future episode, not just about this, but any particular situation that's happening. I do recommend take a look at the situation for yourself and make your own decision, because if it does go further south as it's expected to, you're going to want to make sure that you have plans, not just for your finances and things, but also for your economy, and make sure that you are in a good spot, in good shape to react accordingly, which whatever that means. For example, if you have younger kids, you know that the males would have had to sign up for selective service. So we don't know how that might play in. We don't know if that could be called to action for certain people because of selective service that hasn't been used in a long time. But with the current administration, we simply can't know. And that's something just to think about. I'm not trying to instill fear. I'm saying it's something to just be processing and thinking about. You're going to go throughout your day, and rightfully so, you should. But I don't think we should lose sight of planning and prep and making sure that we're ready for whatever happens. And meanwhile, we can hope that cooler heads will prevail. Probably not going to happen from the Biden administration. Probably not going to happen from Putin. But perhaps other members of NATO can do a better job on the diplomacy side to try to help calm things down. That's all I got for you here today. Again, I will be having more guest interviews. One is scheduled for recording this week, and I'm excited to talk to him. And that recording will be available, should it complete, that will be available on Monday. And that's the next time that you will hear from A Gentleman's World. We appreciate you if you have subscribed to the show. Please, if you find the information interesting, you like the guests and you like our cadence and you like our style, please do share and point anybody to CryptoTalkRadio.net. And there you'll find A Gentleman's World if you scroll down, and they can subscribe on the platform of their choice. And the more that we share and more people hear this message, the more we can bring the message to you. We also want to be mindful also of the guests that we bring on so that you get the best possible quality. It's always our goal. Regardless, thank you. We appreciate you, and I will check in with you on Monday.